Today's Thursday, March 21st, 2024. We have a really good one for you today. Here's a taste.
You're right. It's not an easy operation. Not a lot of people do it. Not a lot of people see them because you got to take care of baseball players. But it's one of the most reproducible, predictable operations that we now do for baseball players. And the numbers are astounding. I saw 17 players between yesterday and today that need Tommy John surgery.
What?
Now, college, high school, that's all levels. Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
And I'm in love with this good life. Can't give it up. Make it to the top and keep climbing. I wanna live it up. The good life. I'm coming up, I'm coming up. The good life, oh, good life, good life, good life,
boom, coated high. Chichi, it's going to be a good one today, brother.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. You know, it's funny. I wish we had done this earlier because I just had to give my dog ACL surgery and I wish I could have gotten more advice because $7,000 later, she's upstairs running around. Anyway, very excited about this nonetheless.
Hey, well, this guy's a little different. He doesn't do dog surgeries, but he does some of the best surgeries in the country. Really a dear friend of mine, first and foremost, has been the Reds team doctor, physician, lead surgeon for the last 28 years. I think he's one of the best Tommy John surgeons in the country, as has been seen as thousands. He's done thousands and thousands of Tommy John surgeries, and some of the best players in Major League Baseball have come to see him. So let's bring him in, Dr. Tim Kremchak. What's up, Doc? How you doing, brother?
Dude, what an introduction. Holy cow. I had to do this more often.
You deserve it, man. You deserve it. Hey, I want to tell you a quick story, brother. When I first got to the Reds in 1998, I get traded opening day, and I get there, and the third day I'm there in during batting practice, I end up taking a shot in the eye, like, bam, orbital fracture, down for the count. They whisk me off to the hospital. And bam, who's there with me every day? This is a first intro to Dr. Kremchak. He's like, hey, I do. I'm Dr. Kremchak. You're going to be okay. And, you know, when I look back, I didn't know if I was going to be okay. But honestly, Dr. Kremchak, when I was 23 years old, I'm in that hospital. Having you there with me was such a big thing in our relationship. Obviously, would grow. What do you remember about that time, Doc, when I took that shot in the eye?
I remember, oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, that was a nasty fracture. Yeah. And, you know, you were a young kid just coming up and going to be a big part of the Reds. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this better be done right. Now, one of my associates that I called in to do it, Dr. Cipella.
Yes. So awesome. Thank you, Dr. Cipella. Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome. And, once we got in and, you know, I scrubbed with him, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I'm sitting here with your eye. You know, he just told me not to hurt anything. I said, okay, you got it. And I'm thinking his eye looks pretty good. Now all I have to do is pump him up and get him back out there. So my biggest concern is you're going to be afraid to go out and hit again. You know, you're going to get hit in the eye. But it turned out pretty good.
It turned out incredible. Literally, I mean, Dr. Cipella saved my career. You being there too was this incredible time. But like I said, that was my first intro to you. And then obviously, I've gotten two shoulder surgeries from you, one in 2002, one a couple years ago. And I tell you what, Chinch, when you go see Dr. Kremchak too, you talk about, you know, it's first class operation. The last time I stayed, I even stayed at his house. Hillary was making me cookies. It was incredible.
We felt sorry for him. He's like a wounded animal.
I know. It's like Sean Casey. I'm picturing Sean Casey at 23 years old with those baby blue eyes, looking like a Saint Bernard on your operating table. And you must have been like, oh my God, this poor kid. What are we gonna do with him?
You know what? You know what? Back then, it's different than baseball is now. And you got to be friends with. You know, we were friends with Pete Harnish, Griffey, Larkin, all these guys. You know, Hal Morris was when I started. The guys were different than they are now. Now maybe that's because I'm older and a bunch of younger guys, but you know, it's a different ball game. But we were all friends. I mean, we were close in the same age, and we used to joke around a ton in the locker room. And I just felt like I was part of the guys, and it was a lot of fun. So, you know, I when you were here a couple of years ago, I drive home, all of a sudden he's in my pool. I said, "What are you doing?" He's in my pool.
I was like, this house is incredible, Doc. I'm just going to move in for a couple weeks if you don't mind.
It's like one of those stories. How do we get this guy out of here? Had a one-way ticket. Like, what's up with this?
Oh, so good. Well, Doc, one of the big reasons we're with you now is this is the 50th year of Tommy John's surgery, right? Am I correct with that? This is the 50th year of Tommy John's surgery. And the reason it's called Tommy John surgery, because the pitcher Tommy John had this procedure done 50 years by, I believe it was Dr. Job, right?
Yes, Frank
Job. Did the first one. Can you explain to our listeners, because we all hear about it all the time, it's such a big part of baseball now. You are one of the best doctors in the world that does Tommy John surgery. What is Tommy John surgery exactly?
Well, if you look at the inside part of your elbow, when a thrower throws, there's a ligament that holds the two bones together. And the problem is that guys throw so hard, the amount of force on the inside of the elbow is greater than the strength of the ligament. So you need the right, command, you need the right delivery, you need the muscles to work, everything to kind of work together so it doesn't tear. Now we're finding pitchers over the years that are throwing harder and throwing longer and throwing year round. There's a lot of reasons for this. That ligament just doesn't hold up. So what you have to do is you have to make a new ligament. So you take a tendon, typically you take a tendon from the forearm or the leg, and you transplant it to the inside part of the elbow, and that tendon turns into a ligament. We call that ligamentization. Now there's all sorts of variants. Some guys are using this collagen internal brace and trying to repair the ligament. Sometimes we do hybrids where we do both the ligament and the tape and a tendon. But that's basically it. You're reconstructing the ligament, the inside part of the elbow. The funny part about this, I met Frank Job many, many years ago. One of my greatest stories, I'm sitting at the dinner table in about 1999, phone rings. And all of a sudden they said, oh yeah, Dr. Job was on the phone. I said, he was one of my heroes. And we were just talking about some player just because, he's one of the pioneers. And I learned a lot from him, a lot from Lou Yoakum. And obviously when I trained down with Jim Andrews, learned how to do them. And you're right, it's not an easy operation. Not a lot of people do it. Not a lot of people see them because you got to take care of baseball players. But it's one of the most reproducible, predictable operations that we now do for baseball players. And the numbers are astounding. I saw 17 players between yesterday and today that need Tommy John surgery. 17.
What?
Now, college, high school, that's all levels. Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. Can you, Doc, can you talk? Go ahead, Chinch.
This is like one of the stupidest things you can do to your body, right? Like women's softball players can throw a lot because they're just walking, right? Like how much stress, like the stress that you put here by throwing something is bad.
That's right? Exactly right. Well, throwing a baseball is one of the most unnatural acts in sports and overhead baseball. But you said it right. If your shoulder's not strong enough, your elbow, your arm lags behind, you're not turning your core, you fatigue and drop your arm, it places all that stress in the inside part of the elbow. The problem with baseball today is it's all about velocity. And, people don't look at you unless you're throwing over 90. And in high school, if you're not throwing over 90, they don't look at you. And it's very unnatural for a young child in high school, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, to be throwing over 90 miles an hour. Their bodies just aren't strong enough, and they can't sustain that. And that's why we're seeing so many of these, and it's a real shame.
Can you tell, Doc, I know when I went in for surgery, when I was getting prepped, I saw a couple of young kids. I want to say the kid was like 13 years old or 14 or when I came in to visit you and you're like, yeah, he's having Tommy John. I was like, what? I actually couldn't believe it. Are you seeing younger kids coming in nowadays than ever?
Absolutely. And the problem is a couple things. Number one, travel baseball, how competitive your son's been. You probably did it. Your son did it. It's one of those things. Kids don't just play football, basketball, baseball. They're playing baseball year round. And so their bodies can't take it. They fatigue. Their young bodies, 13, 14 years old, they're still maturing. Their arm slot's not right. Their shoulder's not right. Yet, what do they throw to? The radar gun.
Right.
So you're 13 years old, and you have six radar guns sitting behind home plate. your father or your parents or your coaches, you got to be seen, got to be looked at. They got to see you now because you still can go to college and play or whatever it might be. And so these kids are gassed and throw it as hard as they can to the plate, and their bodies just can't handle it. So they either break the bone on the inside of their elbow or they tear the ligament. So yeah, wow. I'm seeing 13, 14, 15 all day long.
Wow. What about the thought process? I know when I was coming up and like when little, like, hey, no curveballs until you're a little older, you know? But I mean, I think nowadays there's kids, you know, throwing spin more than ever. Do you recommend that kids don't start throwing curveballs till later? You know, what's your recommendation as the surgeon?
Well, as a surgeon and seeing this all the time, it used to be the age 13 you would start throwing it, but it's not throwing a curveball. When I learned how to throw a curveball, I was in a backyard just screwing around trying to make it. It's learning to grip it and throw it the right way. And I think where kids run into problems is they just like did what I did. They go in the back, they see the ball spin. And it's one of the fights that I've had with Little League Baseball. Little League Baseball, if you look, they're 12 years old and 80% of the pitches are all breaking balls. And the kids at 12 can't hit a breaking ball. So the more it breaks, the more the pitcher gets them out.
Right.
We had kids in Cincinnati, the Hamilton baseball team that went to the World Series. And I operated Tommy John on three of their pitchers. And none of only one of them played varsity baseball. The other ones just quit and they were hurt. It was a problem. So these kids, it doesn't catch up to you. The coaches would say, oh, they're fine. They can throw. It's not a problem. But it typically doesn't catch up to you for a couple of years. So these 12-year-olds are having problems then at age 14, 15, and 16, the prime of their high school career, and they were unable to play because some of them had surgery because they're throwing these breaking balls, throwing so much, throwing every day. Because think of it like this. The best players play. The coaches want the best players to play. Now they've got sponsors for these summer teams. These kids are playing 6-7 games a week or days a week, sometimes doubleheaders on the weekends. I mean, they're gassed, not only physically, but mentally gassed. It's too much. And so I think too much is what's causing a lot of these problems. And that's why now when we get to go through the draft in baseball, we want the pedigree. I want to know when these kids start throwing how much they played, how much they're throwing breaking balls, how much you're doing this, how much you're doing that, because that is a great sign to say who's going to break down and who isn't.
Well, I have a question on that real quick, Sean, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I've been working in baseball all these years, and when a draft comes around and speaking to like literally former front office people, and I'm seeing a kid and going, oh, he already blew out. So that almost makes it like more exciting to draft that guy. And that always like was unsettling to me, where it's like, oh, he already had Tommy John, so he's better, you know, he's not going to blow out the way the guy who didn't have it could blow out down the road. Do you see that in the league? And well, it's something you're concerned
the
about?
The answer, it's interesting. When I started with the Reds in 19, my first year was 96, and we started going through the draft, and anybody who had a Tommy John, then we wouldn't draft. Now, if you go through all these kids, or many of them have already had Tommy John, but that's backwards thinking, because the big problem we have now is the younger these kids have the Tommy John, we're talking an average last of about 6 or 7 years. So say you're 18 and you get drafted and you had Tommy John 2 years ago, then you've got 4 years. What takes 4 years to get to the big leagues? And then you're taking about, now you're talking about having to revise it and do it again, which we're doing more and more of. So I think it's backwards thinking if you want to know the truth. The key is monitoring the amount that you pitch and you throw all the way up through high school and into college, getting the right, you know, strengthening program, the command, arm slot, core, shoulder, and all the preventative things. You know, it's like medicine is today in general. It's all about prevention. You know, everybody's doing tests and labs and prevention and cholesterol and this and that. Same with baseball. You got to get yourself conditioned, and hopefully we can diminish the amount of these injuries. But I'll tell you what, if you go look at my office today, somebody's not doing something right because they're all when I'm hurt.
Well, that's why you got a nice pool and a golf simulator that I was using for a couple of days there, because everyone's coming to visit you all the time.
Too? And a guy comes in with a bum shoulder. I mean, holy cow. I mean, are those my pictures on the back wall too, you thought?
I mean, yeah, I stole them from you. Doc, what about a guy like Shohei Ohtani? I mean, just signed for $700 million. The Dodgers knew that obviously he was having his second Tommy John. Is that not a big deal nowadays? You know, you said what, 6 years? You're looking, if he has another one, could it be stronger? Like, you know, what do they do on the second Tommy John?
Well, we do. If you look at a guy, I mean, we've done a number of those in big league players. Mike Clevinger is one of them, and he's pitched pretty well. I mean, he's and he feels good. But you know, Ohtani's a different animal. Number one, he hits. But number two, I think most guys in a market that have had a second Tommy John are not going to get the big money because you have to prove yourself. This is a guy who's a marketing. Obviously, there's a lot to him. Great player, great athlete. Who knows how much he'll pitch? Certainly, is hitting very well, and you know he's just got a Japanese following that's going to be financially lucrative for the Dodgers well as him. So, yeah, I'm scared to death for him. He throws hard. Who knows how long he'll last pitching? But the way he's hitting, who needs a ligament? Who cares?
You don't. What about the mechanics? You were talking about it earlier. Have you become almost like a pitching coach throughout the years? Like when you talk about, you know, when you see a guy, you know, obviously I'm not exactly, you could speak better about this, but when you see an arm angle, you know, is a guy drop, you know, is he too low? Is he too high? Oh man, that's too much pressure on the ligament. Does the split finger also do that too? Like, what are the pitches that a guy throws that really put stress on that ligament? And what's the best technique for these guys, these pitchers, to avoid maybe putting stress on that ligament?
Well, number one, the problem is, and you remember Scott Williamson. Well, Williamson had the splitter. And I told him before he blew out twice, actually, his out pitch was the splitter. So the way he stayed in the big leagues was to throw the splitter. Otherwise, he's not in the big leagues. Right. Now, this thing doesn't, you know, dive down and gets players out. I mean, he made the All-Star team. He was Rookie of the Year. He had all these kind of things that, you know, allowed him to, you know, continue his career. The answer to your question is I'm not a pitching coach, and I have to be very careful and selective. We've got actually one of the better pitching coaches in baseball right now. DJ is excellent. And the players listen to, we have the analytics that watch these players, their arm slots. I will, during the draft, when they're showing us players, you watch their motion, some of the herky jerky, low arm angle motions, I'd stay away from. But again, if you watch guys, you know, if you go back and over the years and watch Don Drysdale pitch, he was same arm angle every time, this big, strong, hulking guy. Boy, I heard stories about him, too. You know, he does big buck teeth. Pete Rose would come and stand on the mound. And Pete Rose used to get a hit or fly out, and he would always go by, and he'd always nudge the pitcher. He said he did that one time to Don Drysdale. Next time he got up, he threw it his head four times. Ball one, ball two, ball three, ball four. He goes, nobody goes and knocks Mr. Drysdale. Pete stayed away from him. And Bob Gibson, too. Bob Gibson.
Bob. He'd let you know.
He said Bob Gibson was like a lion coming off that mound. He goes, nobody wanted anything to do with him. But, you know, there are ways. You know, we watch. The key, I think, if we're going to minimize the amount of injuries in pitchers in baseball, is to watch and find a way. Oh, when are they fatiguing? Mm-hmm. You know, we've got the 100 pitch.
Right.
Pitchers, you know, you get past six innings and it's a, you know, it's a great game now. I mean, when I started back in even 96, 97, guys are throwing, John Smiley's throwing 9-inning games. Go back and talk to Jim Maloney, he was throwing 14-inning games, 180 pitches. It was different back then. I mean, the four-man rotation with the Miracle Mets. I mean, these guys, Tom Seaver, Jerry Kuzman, not Nolan Ryan was in their bullpen back then. But the point is, you watch films of Nolan Ryan pitch. Arm slot, same uses big body, same arm slot every time, and that ball came out at 200 miles an hour. That's another guy you didn't want to tick off. I mean, you'll get you in a headlock and start pounding on you. You don't care who it is. But yeah, there are ways to look for these things. And I, you know, one of the things we do is we communicate to the coaches and say, hey, when a guy's gassed or he's tired, get him out of there. Because number one, he's going to try to overthrow. He's going to change his mechanics. And again, what does everybody throw to? Hey, you know, I've heard stuff like, well, he was at 94 and now he's drawing 93. Oh, you know, they're looking at the radar gun. It's all about the radar gun. I look at stats. You know, I go back to guys like Greg Maddux. I'm sure you face Greg Maddux.
A lot.
Bingo, bingo, bingo. He's throwing 89, 90, corner, corner. You know, these kind of
moving it.
Yeah. And some of these guys, you know, you're throwing 100 miles an hour. Even Chapman, who throws hard, these guys have learned to hit him. You watch Hunter Green throw 100 miles an hour, but he throws it. He doesn't know where he's throwing it. If he doesn't know, they crush him. The hitters are too good now. It doesn't matter how hard you throw, it's where you throw it.
Can you identify immediately when I got to go back? Case, this is funny because Al Leiter, when we started MLB Network, one of the biggest phenoms was Steven Strasburg. Like he was going to be the next Nolan Ryan, whatever. And Al Leiter, he always used to call it an inverse W, which I used to argue with him. I'm like, isn't that an M? But he used to say Strasburg did this thing where it looked like he had an inverse W. And he goes, he's going to blow out. He's going to blow out. And then, of course, by the end of his career, he did, you know, he kind of broke down. Can you just immediately identify something and go, that guy's going to blow out? When you're watching the eye test,
you can. It's like a golf swing. You know, when he does that inverted, and a lot of guys do that now. You know, you look at him. Some more dramatic than others, but it's your body is turning and your arm is dragging. And when your arm drags and you throw that hard, it places much more stress in it. And I think that's what Al meant by that. In other words, it's like a golf swing. If you turn your body too fast, you're going to slice the ball. And so you can't get your body around fast enough, or you've got to, the rhythm has to be right. And as you fatigue and throw, you know, you're into the fourth, fifth inning, you know, you're placing so much stress on that elbow because your body, they're not in sequence anymore. It's impossible. You can't throw 100 pitches and still stay in sequence that way. And I think that's what Al meant. He was right. Obviously he was right. And so you've got to, again, I've crossed the line a few times with pitching coaches and, you know, I learned very quickly I'm not a pitching coach. I stay away from that because that's not my gig. But we have gotten so sophisticated now with analytics, with all these cameras in the ballparks watching these guys. We've got to find a way to say, okay, when are you dropping 2 degrees in your arm slot? When are you fatiguing? When are you not turning enough? Get those guys out, and that's going to protect those guys from getting hurt. And again, one of the biggest problems we have in baseball is how do we keep our stars in the field? How do we keep these guys going without getting hurt? I mean, how do we get the mega stars on TV that you guys talk about on the MLB, you know, network playing? That's what we have to do to keep the interest in the game, and so we have to, you know, stop them from getting hurt. As Jack McKeon told me one year, Doc, we have more MRIs than RBIs on this team. And he was right.
That's so good. It's so true. I got a question for you, Doc. You know, well, obviously the Yankees recently were, you know, obviously Gerrit Cole, MRI. Then you see Judge, you know, MRI and stuff. I had a question about you, you know, being the team physician. If a player comes in of that caliber, of just any player, are you like, hey, let's get him in the MRI machine right away? Is that the first protocol if someone says they're banged up or they, I think this is bothering me. I mean, is it MRI right away?
Well, it's changed a lot. I think we've lost the art of medicine because now everybody thinks the MRI is the cure-all. And I think sometimes an MRI can be hurtful because you see things that you wouldn't normally see and hold players out that you wouldn't normally hold out. So, yeah, at the major league level, everybody's getting MRIs. We get more MRIs than we need to. We need to go back to talking to the player, examining the player, see what they want to do. Because you get an MRI and it shows a little bit, then the agents get involved.
Right.
The agents, you know, the agents are there to protect your players. So all of a sudden, you know, they're out for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks and then they have to build themselves back up again. So and you've got to convince the baseball staff that people don't need that many MRIs. I mean, okay, you get one. Why do you need five?
Right.
Give me a break. And I think the MRI has helped us in many, I don't know Gerrit Cole's specific problem, but I'm sure it showed some changes in his elbow. And they said, okay, some inflammation, something that you wouldn't see necessarily let's back him off because he's a franchise player. We need him. We need him for the rest of the year. We don't want him blowing out now. So, you know, we use it. I think we use it a little too much. MRIs, they're only a tool. It's like an X-ray. It should aid in, again, the old baseball. And I guess I'm an old baseball doctor now. You know, I'm not the old rub dirt on it, go out and play. I'm not one of those guys. But I think we have to, you know, be a little bit more in tune with the players. Again, when you played, we should have great relationship. All the guys, they come in, we BS, how you doing? They tell you things, you talk to them, they're a little sore, they play.
Yeah.
You need a little medicine, this is what you do. Okay, fine, we'll do a little exercise, this is what you do. Now they come in, MRI, call your agent, second opinion. Okay, and the problem is the second opinion, they don't care about the team, they don't really, you know, they don't care. They just, right. They're gonna be safe, so I'll shut them down for 6 weeks. Wow.
Right.
That's what game is going to, that's going to destroy the game. I think it really, I really do.
And what I thought of that too, when obviously Cole was heading out to LA to see the doctor out there. What do you feel about second opinions, doc? Are you cool with that or?
Well, yeah, I see a gazillion second opinions, you know, from different teams and agents send them to me. The problem is the second opinion's always right. And that's not true. Mm. You see, yeah. The guys that take care of the team should be quality people. They should love the game. They should get along with the players, and they should be good at what they do. Yeah. And so you've got to put I've always put the player first. And I give the Reds an awful lot of credit because the Reds have always supported how I wanted to treat a player because it was always right for the player, which is ultimately going to be right for the team. The second opinions only want to appease the agents. The agents want to be in control. And so they have no, you know, they have no insight of the team, what the guy wants to do, the player wants to do, what the player is all about, who he is, why he is, how he wants to gut it out to play so he can get another year and his, you know, when he retires. They're not into that. And so the sad part, myself included, when people come for second opinions, if I said X, it's always X. Mm-hmm. It might not be right, but the second opinion is always right. And sometimes that can be hurtful to the team and to the player, but the agents are controlling it now. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's a different environment. Doc, what about you? I admire you so much, man, because the grind of the season for a player is a lot. The grind of for the coaches, for everybody in this industry. And I don't know, man, I don't know if you've missed more than a handful of games in the last 28 years. I mean, I'm just kind of throwing that out there, but I think I'm pretty close because I don't think you ever missed a game in my 8 years with the Reds. You were always there. If someone got hurt, bam, you were there. That was always felt good as a player. Like, hey, is Kremchek here? Yeah, he's coming down right now. He's on his way. How do you do it, man? How do you grind the way you do? Because I've seen you doing the surgeries and all the stuff that you do. All the thousands of surgeries you do, like you said, you have these 17 guys this week. How do you do what you do with your job? And then bam, down to Great American Park, you're there until all the wee hours of the night, and then you do it again the next day. How have you been able to do it, man?
Well, I'll tell you what, and I tell, you know, as one of my young associates who was one of my fellows is helping me do the day-to-day. Obviously, you know, I'm down there most of the time. But two things. Number one, you got to love your job and what you do. And I did the Reds because it was my hobby. I love baseball. I love the guys. I love the team. And that was my outlet. It was something I really enjoyed. Certainly some days it got a little hectic, but it was my hobby. And so I tell people, if you do this for the money, you do it for the fame, or you do it for, I mean, the spotlight can be bright and it can be hot at the same time. So you gotta be careful. But if you don't love the game and love the guys and love the team, it's not worth the time and the effort. I loved it, and I still do. I mean, I loved, you guys are my friends. I mean, Barry Larkin's my friend. Ken Griffey Jr. is my friend. Adam Dunn is my friend. All the Austin Kearns, all these guys that I knew were my friends. And, you know, Marty Brenneman is my friend. And guys like Jim Bowden are my friend. I mean, they call me, we talk, I help them. And it's just part of the hobby. The funny part was the players would always say to me, yeah, I've got an off day tomorrow, Doc. What are you doing? I'm working. I have a full-time job. I'm getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm working. It is not my off day too. So let's be careful about these things. And it's, you know, you're, when you're down there, the one thing a guy like me always just wants is just to be part of the team. You love the game, you love the guys, and you want to be treated by the Rick Stows of the world.
Yeah.
And by the manager, by the players. And I always was treated as part of the team. And that kept you going. And you always, no question, you pulled for the players. You want them to do well. You want the team to do well. Unfortunately, I've not been to a World Series yet.
Yeah, it's coming, Doc. It's coming. This team's good.
So. I certainly hope so.
This team's coming. You deserve it, too. And you're right, man. You were part of the team. As much as I looked over and saw Griffey and Dunner, I mean, like I said, if something went wrong, and usually it did with all of us at times, you know what I mean? With all those guys coming up, coming down, I mean, we're like, where's Kremchak? Bam, you were right there. So appreciative of that all those years, Doc. What about for you as far as, like, can you think back to what one of your toughest surgery was? Like, wow, how are we going to do this one? Like, this is new or something.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's interesting you asked that, because in 2002 or three, I believe it was, and this is about, again, being the team doc, being part of the team, and having the players know you, trust you, like you, and they know you'll do anything for them. So I remember Junior hurt his hamstring in San Francisco.
Yep.
And back then, we didn't MRI hamstring. You had a hamstring, you rehab it, you know, whatever. So I'm driving in my car, and it's Junior. He goes, you know how Junior is. Yeah, Doc. What's up? He goes, this isn't right. I said, all right, we will get an MRI. Well, we found out he had pulled the hamstring completely off the bone.
Oh, my.
And I'm going, oh, my. And so I said, I don't do that. I've never done that operation. So I sent him down. Remember, Greg Lynn was a trainer.
Yep.
Sent him down to in North Carolina. This guy had done a bunch of these through women's soccer players. And Junior and Greg went down. And the next day, hand to God, I'm sitting in my office, the knock on the door. It's Junior. Yo, Doc, when are we going to fix this? I said, what are you talking about? He goes, I trust you. I said, Junior, I've never done it. He goes, you're a doctor. Read about it. So I did. I did it. And
wow,
you talk about seeing your career go past. You know, here's all century player, all star, Ken Griffey Jr. I mean, you know, my friend, da 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 da. I either gonna make it or I'm gonna get destroyed. Now I'll move to Arkansas somewhere. and you know what? The hardest part about that is, so we fixed it, and I was like, you talk about a breath afterwards, and Junior. Afterwards, we gave him this scooter. Yeah. So the scooter was like turquoise. And he looked at me and he goes, there's no way I'm using that. I said, it's just a it's just for a little while. We had the Teddy, everybody in my office, we went together. We had to put it out for him. I mean, it was black with this. And he goes, okay, I'll use that then. So he come back and he wins comeback player of the year the next year. So the funny part about it is that as a gift he gave me, and you've probably seen in my office, these big, huge pictures from Sports Illustrated where he went with the Seattle and climbed over the right field wall, grabbed the ball, and threw it all the way in. And the last thing he wrote on is, the only other guy that could have done that wears a cape. So he gives me these photos that he got from Sports Illustrated. I said, thanks. It cost me $7,000 to frame them. I said, come on. But that was, I'll tell you what, high profile. You had the news media waiting outside. You had the general manager. You had everybody in the world asking about Junior, about this operation that he had, to a young surgeon who has never done it before. Wow. But it just shows you the trust that the players had in, you know, a guy who's part of the team. I was just part of the team, and it worked out.
I remember that. I mean, I just remember that. I remember how big a deal it was, first off. I did not know you'd never done it before, which is even more impressive.
And well, not a lot of people have, but you know what? When you're going to have somebody operate on you, you got to trust them. You got to trust you. You know that they're going to give everything they got, and they're not going to stop until it's right. Yeah. And sometimes when you go out of town and see some of these other guys, you always wonder, you know, the players would always ask me, hey, Doc, you know, you're doing all these surgeries. Every now and then you just say, meh. I'm just going to cut this one short. I said, oh, you can't do that. you can't imagine some of the questions I've been asked. But I'll tell you what, being part of the team, I used to go down and work out in the workout room. And some of the guys, Harnish and these guys, I remember I was working out And all of a sudden, they said, "Doc's working out." They scream, Larkin's down. And I said, oh, my God. So I ran back. I put my clothes on, and Pete Harnish had cut my underwear in half. It goes up to my head. I put my pants on. The belt breaks. I put the tie's short enough. And I'm thinking, how am I going to run out of the field? They're all laughing.
That's so great. Nothing like a clubhouse, right? Nothing like a clubhouse.
Gosh. I mean, you talk about being humbled. These guys, they knew how to do it. They knew how to get to you.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. Doc, what is your favorite surgery to do? Is it Tommy John or outside of Tommy John, what's your second favorite surgery?
I like to do labral repairs, rotator cuff repairs, and ACLs. Those are my things. There you go.
I'm feeling great.
And yours was a tough one. Yours was easy. You had that helium balloon in there.
I know. That was incredible. That was incredible. Yeah. Tell us about that. That was the Chish. Listen to this. It's really cool.
So you do a rotator cuff repair that's a really thin rotator cuff, and there's this new device. It's called the InSpace balloon, and it's made by Stryker, and it goes in, and it's a big balloon you blow up, and it holds the humeral head down and allows the rotator cuff to heal. It's really amazing. But look at your shoulder.
Oh, dude, it's incredible. And I could feel the difference. You know, I had the surgery in 2002. This time with that balloon in there, I was like, wow, it just gave me space. I could feel it gave me space. I was like, wow, it feels incredible. So you know what you're doing, Doc.
You gotta stay up with the times. You gotta stay up with the innovations. Yeah. Everybody expects you to. It's one of the fun parts of my job. So, you know, again, going down, hanging with the baseball team, hanging with the guys, seeing the ball players play, doing what I do. I like the Tommy Johns because it's different. I'm pretty good at it. And you love to see the guys. You know, it's like Justin Wilson came back to the Reds this year. We did his, not last year, the year before. And now the Reds bring him back, and he's going to be a big part of the bullpen. To me, that's exciting to watch. You know, same with Suter, same with Diaz, who we did when he was in minor leagues. Antone, these guys, it's so fun to watch them out there, watch them succeed, make their money, take care of their family. It's just a big circle. And it's just my little contribution. So it's
all change. Right. Don't sell yourself short, Doc. You're not pretty good at it. You're like arguably the greatest in the world at it.
No, actually, and Chinch, you should see. I don't know if it's a HIPAA violation or what. I can't name all the names, but all I know is if you go to Doc Kremchek's office, you're like, you did him. It's incredible. Even like rock and roll stars too. Like, I mean, I'm going to say it. I don't care if he comes after me, but Mick Jagger has a picture. Hey, Doc, thanks a lot for taking care of me. You're the greatest or whatever. I'm just saying, everybody, dude, Doc has done so many famous people and athletes. It's not even funny, but like we obviously can't get it in. Like, I don't want to like any violations, but it's incredible, Doc. Tell him.
Well, yeah. I mean, I used to do a lot of the stuff. I mean, it's fun. Pavarotti, Reba McEntire, Alan Jackson, all these guys. So I've got pictures of my wall, and I always tell everybody, I said, if medicine goes to hell in a handbasket over the weekend, I can turn this into a sports bar. I'm ready to go. Pour a few beers. I have TVs in every room, and we're all watching. Come on, and we got the Final Four. The girls, you still got a job here. Let's go. You're going to be serving now, so bring it up.
I can't wait to tell the rest of the Cinciamino family that you operated on Pavarotti, man. That's a Pavarotti. That's Pavarotti. The biggest one to me. That's
my mother-in-law. She's passed, but that was, she didn't care about the ball player. She thought Pavarotti was pretty cool.
That's so cool.
He was pretty cool, actually. He was pretty cool.
Wow. Was he? That's so awesome.
He was. I mean, I'm not into the opera, but he was pretty cool. And boy, he could eat.
Legendary.
Talk about the spreads down at the ballpark. Oh man, in his place, I mean, he would belt out a tune or whatever they call him. He'd take the golf cart back to his place with a scarf over him, and he'd go back. And I mean, it looked honestly like Maggiano's, the whole place. Bingo. And if you looked at him, you knew he liked to eat.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. He wanted everybody to eat with him. He's you know, he didn't eat by himself. If you ever watched Goodfellas, it's like, hey, let's eat. That was him. Everybody ate.
So good. So great.
So good.
No low-carb diets with him.
Doc, the last one I want to talk on is Joey Votto, because obviously, Joey Votto, we all know that you did his surgery last year, or a year and a half ago or whatever. And now he's with Toronto and, you know, came out the gates, hit a nice home run to left center the other day. You know, do you think there's more in the tank for Joey? And is it, and after a shoulder surgery, I know for me, I felt like a year later, I was 100%. I know I came back after 7 months and I was playing, but you know, I didn't feel like myself until the next year. Do you find that with shoulders after shoulder surgery?
Absolutely. It's, you know, even Tommy John, anytime a surgery, it takes you a while to actually, you know, really feel normal again. And here's the thing about Joey. Joey is so regimented in what he does. I mean, he's so inquisitive. He knows more about hitting. He reads about hitting. You know, he reads about rehab. He reads about shoulders. He reads about all this stuff. So he's one of these guys that he knows his body better than anything. And I think that Joey is one of these guys who's going to show people he wouldn't come back and play if he weren't ready. He wouldn't come back and play if he didn't have more in the tank. And I think he does. Now, can he play 162 games? Probably not. But can he go out and contribute and help Toronto? I think in a big way. His hometown, it's sad it's not with the Reds. I think he could have really helped the Reds. But knowing Joey Votto the way I do, and he's a very good friend. He's become a very good friend, and we've leaned on each other a lot over the last couple of years. You watch, Joey Votto's going to put up some numbers this year, and everybody's going to say, wow, that's pretty good. And then the big question is going to be, does he play next year?
Right. Yeah.
I really believe that. He's in great shape.
Yeah.
He's not as good a shape as you are right now, but he's
No.
I'm not sure about that. But I mean, let's put things in perspective here. I mean, but he's in great shape, and I think once he rolled his ankle, he'll be fine with that. He'll be up with Toronto, and bing, 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 you watch.
Doc, thanks a ton for coming on Inside the Mayor's Office with Chinch and I today. What an incredible conversation. We can't wait to put it out, especially with it being the 50th year of Tommy John, and obviously the incredible surgeon that you are, and like I said, incredible friend for me, man. I'm very grateful for our friendship over these years and all that you've done for me and my whole family, man. I can't thank you enough. And I'm looking forward to coming over at some point. Tell Hillary to have the room ready for me. I want the warm cookies, and I'll be out back in the pool if you need me.
I'll tell her you'll be over this afternoon, of course.
I'll be back.
America's guest, baby. America's guest.
How are we going to get this guy out of here? How are we going to get this guy?
We need to call the cops. Come on.
Doc, thanks again, man. See you soon, brother.
Take care. Bye now. Thank you for having me.